So this by Jane Hirschfield. It's called No Wind, No Rain. No wind, no rain. The tree just fell, as a piece of fruit does. But no, not fruit, not ripe, not fell. It broke, it shattered. One cone's addition of resinous cell sap. One small-bodied bird arriving to tap for a beetle. It shattered. What word, what act was it we thought did not matter? One cone's addition of resinous cell sap, one small-bodied bird arriving to tap for a beetle. It shattered. What word, what act was it we thought did not matter? So this talk is all about this conditionality. One cone's addition of cell sap, one small-bodied bird, the conditions that lead to the shattering of a tree, the conditions that lead to each moment. And taking note of the way that she ends this poem, what word, what thought was it that we thought didn't matter? She's adding weight, she's adding meaning to every word, every thought. Because just like that small-bodied bird arriving, that can make all the difference in this very delicate and many-layered world of conditions. It's just conditions. But each moment, each act, each intention really matters. So dependent co-arising, paticca samuppada. It's a fun word to say, paticca samuppada. So in all transparency, I've never really understood this. And so I really wanted to learn it. That's why I put this chart up on the board for you all day, really wanting to make some sense of it. Not needing to understand every piece, but how can we make meaning? How is this important? How can this help us in our practice in very practical ways? So all the complexity of these 12 links, really the basic, the simplest pointing is simply this and that. That's the simplest principle, this then that. And the Buddha says it's when a yogi understands when this exists, that is. Due to the arising of this, that arises. When this doesn't exist, that is not. Due to the cessation of this, that ceases. So in its simplest form, just that. It's a pointing to the nature of reality. So conditionality all depends on everything else. And that can seem sort of obvious. Yeah, it's just a coming together of conditions. But the magic of this is that through seeing all of these conditions, again, not in their detail, but perhaps maybe big picture, the coming together and the falling apart, the coming together and the falling apart, it's a gateway to emptiness. We start to see these new worlds. We've been talking about these dream worlds, this magical realm. We start to see them opening as we start to peer through the gaps in this cycle of conditionality. And then through that wonder, through that emptiness, this is how the world becomes lovable. This is how it becomes even more precious. Because it's floating, it's delicate. It's all so intricately woven. And it can be untangled, unwoven, unfabricated. The Buddha said, profound ananda is this dependent origination, and profound does it appear. It is through not understanding, not penetrating this subtle law that this world resembles a tangled ball of thread, a bird's nest, a thicket of grass or reed. We're entangled in a tangle. Have you felt this in your meditation? Just tangle. Rebecca's karmic knots. This is the Buddha saying, yep. So we're tangled. It's a tangle, a bird's nest, a thicket. And yet, he said, when we do understand, whoever understands the law of dependent origination understands the Dhamma. And whoever understands the Dhamma understands this law of dependent origination. So we're untangling. So what is it about these 12 links? So of course it's sort of obvious. We all can say, yeah, of course, things are conditioned. Things come to be because of these laws. We start to see in retreat, we wake up in a mood and maybe we see all of the previous conditions, the dreams we had, or the practice that was unfolding, or the weather. We can trace back, even in deeper states of samadhi, we can trace back almost infinitely how the mind is this way now because of all these traces, the legacy of past moments. This can be such a wonderful way to really understand the nature of these wholesome, the kusala mind states, the akusala mind states, the less skillful, when we really start to see the trace they leave in our minds. Oh, this is how the tangle becomes less tangled. We start to see, oh, this wholesome, this kusala, the skillful, that's the trace it leaves. It leads more towards well-being, towards happiness. And even a trace of greed, a moment of strong greed, a moment of strong hatred, leaves an imprint that then we carry, this burden we can feel. And so the heart begins to incline more and more. It can release the suffering to incline towards the skillful, the beneficial. So I'll give you a very simple example of how conditions come to be. I arrived here almost exactly 2 months ago on February 1st. And I was staying down at the teacher village, right next to here. And it's neighboring Joseph's house. And I know this. And I also knew when I arrived, he was in the middle of his 3-month retreat. His winter retreat, he's done this almost for 50 years now. And so my practice when I'm here and I know he's on retreat, because it's so sweet, in my little kuti, I could see his lights on at night. And I could tune in. I have this practice of kind of tapping into that, the force field that's happening over there, and a sense of maybe receiving some of the blessings of his practice and also paying honor to his diligence, this whole lifetime of practice. And I would walk, you know, on the path from the teacher village to the retreat center as I was teaching in February, and I'd really try not to peek into the windows, but I was like, Joseph is in there somewhere. I could see him. And so as these weeks went on, I started to think, oh, I think he's actually coming out in early April, had this idea. And so I had this dilemma in my mind that I sat with, like a koan, for the beginning of this month. I thought, it'd be really nice to see Joseph while I'm here. Joseph and I are close. I've studied with him for a long time. Often when I'm here, he'll meet with us. And so I thought, maybe I could just send him a little note and ask. But then there was this other part of me that thought, oh, I don't want to disturb his retreat. There's probably lots of people who are wanting to see Joseph. And would it disturb him? No harm in asking. I deliberated, went back and forth. And then a couple weeks ago, I thought, in a moment of clarity, I said, it was a Saturday, I think I was just done teaching. I said, I'm going to go, I know his favorite bakery. And I'm going to go get him his favorite morning bun. I know the pastry he likes. I thought, I didn't do this. It'll be generous. It's my generosity practice. So I did this, put it in a bag, wrote him a little note, very, very sweet, like, happy retreat. And if you have time, I'm here. So I bundled it all up, and Rodney went to deliver to Joseph, and I sort of let it go. And the next day, in my email inbox was an email from Joseph. Hey, sounds good. How about Saturday? So his generosity. And then it was the Saturday of our big ice storm. And Nico and I wound our way through the weather and ended up in this beautiful conversation with Joseph at the end of his retreat. But so many moments, that moment of, well, maybe the main condition was the morning bun, I don't know. But all of these other conditions leading up, that decision to ask his kindness, the right timing, the right day, and then tracing back the many years of phone calls and all the times that he sat up here and I was a yogi, and all this relationship that in the Vajrayana they simply call paticca samuppada, they call it auspicious connection. So that, just that, that's what's happening all the time, conditions. There's intentionality, and there's karma. So the 12 links, I did some research. This is the other lovely thing about being here, is that I could talk to Joseph about paticca samuppada. We got his take on it. And then a couple days later, I had a walk with William Edelgloss down at BCBS. And of course, he's a philosopher. He had lots to say about conditionality. He had just been teaching on it himself down there. Then, just a few days ago, I had a walk with Bhikkhu Nalayo, and I'm, you know, plumbing his mind. What do you think about dependent origination? Of course, he has lots to say. So what a sweet place that we are. Just bless all these wonderful minds in retreat, in practice themselves, years of study. So I'm hoping this talk has some of these gems in here. And one of them is that Anaglio told me that this actually is a wonderful creation myth. The original paticca samuppada comes from the Vedas, and it's a creation myth about how the world comes to be. Originally, there's this dark ignorance, the wide, spacious ignorance, and from there, these movements, sort of subterranean movements, structures, volitions, that then from there is birthed consciousness, vijnana, and name and form, and on. So this was before the Buddhist time. This is a wonderful myth of how the world comes to be, the bhava chakra, the way the world is coming into being. So the Buddha, in all his wisdom, he did this a lot. he took what was already known, a cultural trope, and instead of teaching it as a creation myth, he taught how dukkha is created and how dukkha comes to end. So he reversed its intention. So this is where it comes from. It's maybe why it feels a little opaque. Is that he was really using this whole chain just to teach about how dukkha comes to be. This tangle. And so as I was writing this, I was remembering sitting here on the long retreat Joseph was teaching. It's actually the end of my 5 months, so how lucky to have Joseph at the end. And he sat up here, he has to have like the special Joseph seat because he has such long legs, he's tall. And I don't know if we had these same mics, we might have, but this one was all, it was all knotted. And he sort of like pulled it out in the beginning of his talk, you know, and we're all like trying to pretend that we're not watching him, but we're totally watching him. It took him a while. It took him a while to untangle. He was like very focused on like trying to figure out this knot. And then finally when he got it done, sort of held up the mic, he's like, "That's the end of the talk." It was the entire thing. That's it. That's it. Okay, so these 12 links, I'm going to go through them. And you've seen this graph, this picture, but I'm going to hold it up again just so you're reminded. If I have it here. So this is often taught in a circle, and we might assume that it's linear, or chronological at least. This one leads to this one, leads to this one. These arrows even pointing. But one of the mysterious things about this is that it's not that way. It's not even. So there's actually a whole clump of things at the beginning that all happen at once. They're kind of like a priori. They're like, yes. In order to be a human in this realm, we have all these things clumped together. This first bunch. And then at a certain point, they do get a little bit like boom, 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 especially at the end here with birth and then the whole lifespan, aging, illness, and death. But it's a good thing to know is that it doesn't necessarily have to be boom, 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 linear this way. It can happen kind of like all at once in one moment. In the Visuddhimagga, it's taught as a three-lifetime model. So in this chart, the blue would be the past life. The yellow and the green would be the current life, and the orange would be the future life. So again, you can feel a little bit this tangle. It's like many paticca-samuppadas over little moments and all overarching. So that we get this kind of kaleidoscopic beginning here, and you'll see even more as I describe. So the starting point is ignorance, and again, we don't just start. It's not like ignorance is the first. We all have them going on all at once, but ignorance is a baseline. And in this context, it's the basic not understanding what leads to happiness and what leads to suffering. Not understanding the Four Noble Truths. Chogyam Trungpa says this, "The starting point for paticca-samuppada is bewilderment. We are completely bewildered. Not in the sense of stupidity or ignorance, but we are bewildered in the sense of not having anything to lay our hands on. Everybody possesses this bewilderment." So with avidya as condition, sankharas, these volitional formations, structures, these come to be. The sankhara is another hard word to translate. It's like these below consciousness, these movements like dream states. They're like dreams. And of course, they're conditioned by what's come before, just like our dreams. Formations, structures, subterranean structures. And in some ways, this movement from those structures like dreaming into waking up, this is like that movement from sankhara to vijnana to consciousness. It's like the waking up moment in the morning. And sometimes our dreams can leave a trace of how we wake up, the consciousness we wake up into. That's this vijnana. And when we have consciousness, this vijnana, we also have a body and a mind. We have namarupa. So namarupa is very simply, it's just form, materiality, and all of the mind world, mentality. This can include the five aggregates, intentions. It includes all of this, this kind of mind world. Mind and body, namarupa. So the other way that this isn't chronological, it works backwards, is that they each condition each other. So Sariputta says, just as two sheaves of reed might stand leaning against one another, in the same way, from namarupa as necessary condition comes consciousness. From consciousness as necessary condition comes namarupa. So we start to feel this tangle. It's multidimensional, this thing. So then you have the six sense spheres, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind. Those make contact with the world or with the mind object, which are thoughts and feelings, emotions. And with contact, immediately is Vedana. So this is where it's not like time, right? Time starts to break down because contact and Vedana, they happen at the same time. Contact, Vedana, feeling tone. Pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Those lead into craving, as Rebecca described a few mornings ago. Craving conditions this clinging, upadana, we double down the clinging. And that clinging leads us into this becoming, which is really a momentum, this like the about to moment. Oh, I'm going for the second piece of dessert. I'm going for the thing. I'm reaching for the door. That becoming, bhava. And then, of course, bhava becomes birth. Jati. We take birth into the person who's having the second cookie. Or anything, the one who's outside. Take birth into an identity, and that identity has a whole lifespan. Through that whole lifespan, this can mean a whole life, it can mean a whole thought chain, it can mean the time it takes for you to eat the cookie, and then old age, illness, done. Next moment. So you can see it as kind of rolling along in this kind of wonky, non-linear kind of way. I can also see it as a kind of horizontal that just like whoop, every moment it's like arising. That's why we're tangled and entangled. It's a thicket, a tangle, a bird's nest. One teacher says, everything leans. That's paticca samuppada. Everything leans. So I have this chant. Tanisara and Kittisaro chant this paticca samuppada. It's hard to learn. So I can't say I learned it correctly. But I have my own way of doing it. I won't sing the whole thing, but I'll sing some. Avijja paticca. Paccaya sankara sankara paccaya vijnana vijnana paccaya nama rupang nama rupa paccaya salayatana salayatana paccaya paso paso paccaya vedana. It has this kind of like, oof, that movement. Everything arises from this. And this one has an interesting translation in English. I'll leave it on the board if you're interested. So, someone asked for me to give a real life example. This is very real. This is very timely. It's happening in the moment here. Okay. You get a little window into our marital conversations here. So, Sunday, we're flying back to Oregon. And we have this very peripatetic life where we live in different places and we often don't give ourselves enough time. So we're like packing on to the next thing, we're sort of stressed, not enough time. So we deliberately said we're going to take 8 days in Ashland to pack. On the 9th, we have to leave for another really big journey, like long time on the road. And so we thought, well, we have 3 days of work in Ashland, then we'll have 5 days. 5 days to pack, to see family, like make a very easeful transition. There'll be no conflict. So then, of course, do you remember, those who have been here for a month, do you remember Isabella? Isabella was the one who shopped for our long retreat. She's salt of the earth, my little adopted sister. I've known her whole life. So Isabella invited us to go down the river. So the river, the Rogue River, I grew up every summer going down this river. It's a patch of 4 days of rafting and camping, very magical in southern Oregon. It goes all the way down to the ocean. So every year we've done this, my family, it is like kind of a pilgrimage. So it's very important to do this Rogue trip. And of course, the trip happens to be on those 5 days. So 4 of those would be on the river. Very tight schedule. Also, it's early April, so it's going to be cold maybe, rainy. So, we've got, well, I'll just say, we have different opinions about what should happen in those 5 days. And I'll just speak for myself what happens in this moment. So already that bundle of things, just being human means there's avidya, there's ignorance, there's sankhara, these formations that lead to consciousness. I have a mind and a body, and I've got the 6 senses. So that's already kind of like a priori happening. Then the mind makes contact with the mind object, which in this case is the thought of the river. And I've got these images of the wild irises that are going to be out. And I know the sweet peas will be starting to bloom, and the water will be high, and everything will be green. And of course, my mind is like, yes, it's so pleasant. There's all this pleasant. So contact, sense sphere, contact, pleasant Vedana leading to wanting. Right? Of course, we should go on the river. We don't have much to pack. It's all good. We got to go. My 92-year-old dad might come. He might come. We got to go. So craving, and then doubling down into clinging, especially maybe when he says, I don't want to go. I'm like, no. So the thought is driving all of this. Pleasant, wanting, doubling down into upadana, clinging. And then there's this becoming, this about to moment of, I'm going to do the river. And there's a little bit of a mode of like, I don't care the consequences of what that means for my primary relationship or what that means for the next 5 months on the road. I want to do the river. I'm going. So that's the becoming as you open the phone and start to type the text, like, I'm in. Right? So becoming leading into birth. And right then, I've taken birth into this identity that is going to be the next. Well, we would leave on the 6th. So 10 days from now, good. Anyway. But then so the whole lifespan of 4 days on the river come to an end when we get back. But you can see how that conditions all of the next many moments. How will it be to drive to Colorado and then Madison, having done all of those things. So you got a feel? Dukkha. So also the basic dukkha that... I don't know, part of me is like, is it? Is it dukkha? It sounds pretty great. And that's what I was going to say. The basic dukkha is believing that this river trip is going to make me happy. Right? The basic avidya that doesn't understand what leads to happiness. and what doesn't lead to happiness. Not seeing dependent origination at work. Not seeing the Four Noble Truths. Okay. So we'll keep you posted. I think probably both of us are going to end up on the river. That'll be true to form. He eventually bends to my will. For better or worse. So, there are three places to cut the cycle. Three places. And some of you have heard these, but I'm just going to talk about them briefly each. So the first one is in the step between the six senses and contact. So this very basically in retreat, it's sense restraint. Rebecca talked a few weeks ago about just not having chocolate-covered almonds in her house. Because if she has them, she'll eat them. So this is that renunciation of knowing, oh, here I am at the forest refuge. I just don't have contact with my phone. Right? Simple. So then it doesn't send you down that cycle. And in fact, we use this wisdom a lot. Like, don't have sugar in the house. For me, just don't look at the Vipassana romance. Right? You don't let the contact. When we were talking about, don't let the thought. You can see that kind of bubbling up of the thought that you know is not going to lead to good places. And you say, no, not going to. So you cut right at that sense so that you don't have contact. It's the first place. Sense restraint. I don't really like that translation. I've always felt a little bit like, oh, restrained. So other translations, you could call it sense simplicity or sense release, releasing the senses. That's kind of nice. Second place to cut the chain. This is between Vedana and craving. So Rebecca did this a couple mornings ago. She talked about that. When we're very mindful, simply pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, you can let it just be pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And you don't get slid into that push-pull, I want it, I don't want it. I am ignoring it. And this is exactly what the advice to Bahia was, this beautiful sutta we know, right? In the seen, only the seen. In the heard, only the heard. This very simple, direct, just here, just now, not so much in the push and pull. Clear way. In some ways, this is the most practical way, place you can cut. And then the third place, this might be my favorite one, really noticing that becoming moment. You can do this really well on retreat if you're noticing intentions. You can feel the momentum. You can feel it. But there's more space somehow so that you don't get taken down the same roller coaster, the same hamster wheel. There's more space in between. So in retreat, especially, a lot of people are about to leave. The sense we're having a lot of planning, scheduling, getting ready, packing, planning the next few days. So these are all the kind of becoming moments you might be imagining yourself, whatever day, Sunday, Monday, you're getting into a car, you're getting into a shuttle, how will it be to transition? So this, right here, this is such a potent place in the retreat to notice the about to moment, the becoming into, about to take birth. And here you can have agency. I'm going on the river. I'm not going on the river. I'm doing the transition this way. I'm not doing it this way. And I've heard from some of you even, in knowing our habits, I'm choosing to do it a different way. So empowering. So empowering. Because we see the habits, right? The habit is not enough transition time to go down the river and make too many commitments and then I'm tired. It's right. We see it. So there's a little more choice. And that here, right here, this is how the whole thing is about agency. This is about taking back our power, about having choice. And all of the teachings on generosity, on mindfulness, on intention, on wise attention, on sila. This is like dancing. This is how we dance when we see the conditions. When we see them, there's a kind of, with all these beautiful qualities of mind, there can be a kind of like, here we go down the river. There's a dance. Like, because of this, okay, here I'm responding this way. Because of this, I'm responding this way. And more the mind gets skilled in choosing the kusala route, the beneficial route. What word, what thought was it? Did not matter. So this is what Jane Hirschfield is pointing to, this everything. It's like a drop in the bucket. And we're navigating. We're responding. The whole path becomes one of attunement. Responsiveness, sensitivity. Those who have been doing samadhi, those who have been doing vipassana, all you're doing is tuning, sensitivity. How do we run? How do we flow with this dance of conditions? When we start to see this beneficial, how this also unfolds, the Buddha talked about this. It's like this balance, this middle way between all this choice and agency. We guide our raft towards the wholesome. And then he says, for one who is consummate in virtue, there's no need for an active will. May freedom from remorse arise in me. So it's the nature of things that freedom from remorse arises in a person endowed with virtue. In a person who's free from remorse, there's no need for an active will. May joy arise in me. For it's the nature of things that joy will arise in a person who's free from remorse. So you see, this is conditionality also. So it's choice and it's also conditions. Then you let it kind of flow. For a joyful person, there's no need for an active will. May my body be serene. The nature of things is to lead onward into well-being. So this is why it's not hopeless. We're tangled in a tangle, but there's this natural flow. The Buddha uses this beautiful image. It's like water. And here we are in the wet season. We're watching all these streams in the woods. He says, when these rivulets from the mountains, as the rain pours in heavy drops, water flows in these rivulets, filling the rifts and the gullies, filling them up until they're overflowing. And then as this overflows, it fills the small ponds. The small ponds fill, and then they fill into bigger rivers, which fill and then fill into bigger lakes, which then spill over into big, big rivers. So we see this very natural. This is also like dependent origination, but it's easeful. This is how beauty, how punya, how this goodness, it naturally leads onward in practice. So we don't have to worry, no need for an active will. May the fifth jhana arise. May cessation happen. It's the nature. It's the nature of the Dhamma to continue in this way. So Mingyur Rinpoche's version of this middle way between choice and conditions, he says, when causes and conditions come together, a result is sure to follow. So I will do my best to help others and engage in positive deeds. That's it. So, we have kind of the tangle, Paticca Samuppada, but the other half of the sutta is about when this isn't, then this isn't, and when this isn't, this isn't. So the Buddha goes backwards in the same sutta. He said when there's no ignorance, there's no sankhara. And it's like empty, 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 empty. Poof, 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 poof. It's this magic cycle of cessation then. And he says, Avijaya teva ase saviraga nirodha sankara nirodha sankara nirodha vinyana nirodha vinyana nirodha namarupa nirodha. Nirodha releases. So we often hear about all this tangle, but we hear less often about how it's all empty. It's all empty, empty, empty. Each piece is empty. And all we have to do is start to see that. When we see through avidya, when this ceases, that ceases. There's this beautiful moment in the suttas. The Buddha was teaching a gathering of his yogis at Anattapindika's monastery. And he saw with the Dhamma eye that all of the people listening were ready. They were just right on the edge of freedom, just like you. And this is what he said. Are you ready? He uttered an inspired utterance. There is, yogis, an unborn, a not brought into being, a not made, a not conditioned. If, yogis, there was no unborn, not brought into being, not made, not conditioned, no escape would be discerned from what is born. But since there is an unborn, and not brought into being, and unmade and unconditioned, therefore, an escape is discerned. And it is discerned from what is born, what is brought into being, what is made, and what is conditioned. So we need the fabrication. We discern the unfabricated from this world. From this very real human mind-body world. So that's how, from all this tangle, all these conditions, all the backwards, forwards, everything, up, down, around, have all of this, but when we start to see, we cut through time, we cut through the seeming reality of the self, we cut through all the stories and the projections and the assumptions we have, the delusion Rebecca was talking about, the moment of seeing through, it all disappears. It's not there. And what remains? There's no more leaning. So this is Teijitsu. She was the 18th century abbess of Hakujuan, which is near Eheiji, beautiful Japanese monastery, many, many monks there. So this is her moment. She saw. She saw that all phenomena arose, abided, and fell away. She saw that even knowing arose, abided, and fell away. Then she knew there was nothing more than this. No ground, nothing to lean on, stronger than the cane she held. Nothing to lean upon at all, and no one leaning. And she opened the clenched fist of her mind and let go, and fell into the midst of everything. So in this dream, we start to see no leaning, nobody leaning. It all becomes a dream, a flower in the sky, a rainbow coming together of conditions. And when we see the world in this way, there's still fabrication, this samskrita in Sanskrit. Samskrita means fabricated or made. But another translation of this, samskrita in Pali, for the world, fabricated, but consecrated, sanctified, hallowed, and holy. So it's that touch of emptiness that makes everything sacred. It makes it wonderful. How all these conditions that came to be in this moment. That's wondrous. And all we can do when the heart opens in this way is feel love and wonder. All there's left. Holy, holy. No wind, no rain. The tree just fell, as a piece of fruit does. But no, not fruit, not ripe, not fell. It broke, it shattered. One cone's addition of resinous cell sap, one small-bodied bird arriving to tap for a beetle. It shattered. What word, what act was it we thought did not matter? Every act, every thought, every moment is so important, it's meaningful, it's worthy. It's worthy of your care. So we can just sit quietly here for a moment or two together. Thank you for your kind attention. And we'll chant the sharing of blessings together.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.